Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank my awesome patrons who've supported me over on patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So I want to give a huge shout-out to the awesome Mr. Big Bents, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, and Neo Royal for supporting me. Thank you so much. And if you're interested in helping make more awesome content and supporting the channel, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. Alright, so I've got a very interesting topic for y'all today. It's regarding a very interesting and somewhat controversial, I suppose, style of playing EDH, at least for some. And that's going to be the group hug archetype, typically personified as a way to try to be able to provide resources not just for yourself, but also for the entire table, usually for a benevolent purpose, but, you know, these decks have to win too. So in order to talk to me about group hug and really kind of find out how to maximize the social potential throughout a game of EDH, I have a very awesome friend, Almond, the co-host of the Social Contract and EDH podcast and chief executive nerd of Nerdworks Media. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going great. It's been too long since we last hung out.
Yeah, we had a pretty insane game of Magic, and then, well, you know, like all things that happen in real life, it stopped us from being able to talk Magic, play Magic, basically do all of the nerdy stuff that I actually, like, want to do, but, you know, we're here, so we're having a cool conversation about EDH and something that's near and dear to my heart, group hug, so it's absolute pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being on here. And before we get started, how about you tell the fine folks out there listening a little bit more about your content work in the Social Contract podcast?
Sure. So it's one of those things that I have a friend and co-host of the co-host of the podcast, Alex, and he is a judge. And it was one of those things where I would constantly use him as a resource because Magic is a really complicated game, and EDH is, I think, the format where you allow for most of the complication that can happen. So
that's fair.
Constantly texting him about, hey, how does this interaction work? How does this rule work? How does this rule work? And he and I both had this fondness of talking at the table and being more ingrained with everybody as people as opposed to board states. And I know that that's going to make some people cringe because you might immediately start thinking about the people that don't know what's going on the board because they're paying too much attention to everything else. That's not the case. We like making deals. We like playing politics. We like, you know, pointing out threats on the table, but also making sure that the game is the most enjoyable, not just for us, but everybody at the table. And that's the basis of the social contract. We're all collectively grouping together to try and have the most fun as possible and finding out the different ways to do that. One of the ways that there is to do that, again, everything else aside, you mentioned it at the beginning, we love group hug, and we also know that it is definitely not for everybody. We understand that, but it just makes the game more fun. And I think one of the bad raps on it, and the reason why it's a little bit less played, is because people think that you can't be competitive with it, you can't win with it, and we like to fly in the face of that as much as possible.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those archetypes that I again as I said at the top of the show gets a really bad rap, because again, a lot of the very common group hug decks give a lot of resources to your opponent, and typically when you consider about the 60 card formats especially, the last thing you really want to be doing is providing your opponent some sort of resource that can help them win the game and actively potentially harm you in some way. So the art of being able to try to find a way to be able to not only amass resources for yourself, but also be able to amass more resources for yourself while giving your opponent some, is definitely a challenge that a lot of players have never really gotten the hang of, I suppose, and some find controversial or downright terrible. And of course, we're not here to say anything is terrible. I mean, I've never been able to pilot a group hug deck. It's just, it's one of those things that I've never quite figured out exactly how I can find a way to work with my decks to make them more a group hug. But again, I love seeing group hugs decks across the table because I feel like at that point, another player is helping me do the thing that my deck wants to do. And it helps, you know, it definitely allows me to have the better play experience, which in my experience, you know, allows you to have just a better time at the table no matter what happens. Because, oh, hey, that group hug deck over there is helping me indirectly or indirectly actually do the things that I want to do. So therefore, I feel like it's not just about me and my isolated little box, right? Is that someone is actually trying to force some resources upon me. I mean, this is exactly the whole point of, like, multiplayer, if you think about the video game world, is when you think about multiplayer and not PvP or anything, it's kind of the same thing. It's like you're kind of supporting each other, just that the group hug player is kind of supporting everyone else too, while, you know, trying to somehow find their little value engine somewhere in there. Yeah. And so again, I wanted to start off our conversation here with some of the most popular group hug commanders according to EDH Rec. And so we have obviously the Gay Kings up here at first with 370 mm-hmm. decks. We have Kenrith, Feldegriff, everyone's big favorite Happy Purple Hippo. Quain, which is actually interesting given the fact the Rabbit Wizard out of Commander Legends, deck that I actually have sitting around. I haven't quite found the right balance for this, so again, my experience is not the greatest of this, so that's why I brought you on the podcast, is talk a little bit more about that. And the Selvala Explorer Return, this is the Selesnya one, the basis for my first CDH deck, but again, obviously not in CDH, you're not trying to do that sort of thing. But yeah, sure. And then when you go on, obviously down the list, you'll see a whole bunch of other interesting things. And yeah, this is a very complex theme to really be able to grasp your head around. So when you really think about group hug, what are some of, like, the core tenets that you say any good group hug deck really needs to have in order to function?
All right. So you said two things in particular that I want to piggyback on for that. So when you were talking about playing, like, a multiplayer game as far as, like, an online game together, right? You group mm-hmm. up with people and it's, you know, about, you know, filling each other's weaknesses and everything like that. That's part of why I like group hug, because your enjoyment is, it isn't just something where I don't play group hug decks and just say, no, my entire purpose is going to make everybody else do better. And I think that's one of the misnomers. If you're making a group hug deck and the only thing that it's providing is just making the game bigger and that's it, that's not necessarily good for the table. All that does is it's just providing more. It's not providing interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you bring more people into a multiplayer game, typically, yes, the rewards are bigger, but the game is more difficult. So what I like to think of it as is when I'm building a group hug deck, one of my tenets is, as a metaphor, I want you to think of your playgroup sitting down and the four of you are going to have a foot race, right?
Okay.
Some of you might be faster. Some of you might have been practicing more. Some of you might, you know, have a speed suit or better shoes, all this other stuff that can translate to better cards, more experience, better overall player, etc. And what I think group hug can do is, instead of having that foot race right before the gun goes off for you to start running, I'm going to put everybody in a race car instead.
Okay.
And the difference is, if I know I'm going to be in a race car and I've been driving the race car, I'm going to be a lot better at driving it than everybody else, because I know what to expect. And don't get me wrong, sometimes that's going to get out of hand. Sometimes you're going to draw somebody into victory because you're giving them extra cards, or you're going to ramp somebody into victory because you're giving them extra mana, things along those lines. But the other thing that can happen is if you're playing with somebody and they are playing a very, very high tier deck, like their deck is just by far the best at the table, when you give more resources to everybody, the amount of separation narrows. Even if it's a rising tide that raises all boats, now the deck that was 40% better than everybody else's mm-hmm. is 25% better, because everybody's getting more, everybody's doing more, everybody has more resources, which means this one thing that can stand out is going to have a much harder time. So when I look into Group Hug, you mentioned some of the commanders that are on there, and three of them I have in Aeon Sentiero. I recently made what I'm going to consider the most competitive version of Feldegriff that doesn't cost like $4,000. And my Sylvala Explorer Return deck is probably my most powerful deck. And it's something where I'm going to thrive off giving everybody resources. But what I'm going to do instead is give myself more advantage in getting those resources. I don't mind if everybody gets something as long as I can take advantage of it more clearly and more effectively.
Yeah, and that's the interesting balance that you have to take with the Group Hug decks, because just like you mentioned, is that you do have to be careful with how much you're giving to other players, and that could burn you in the end. But again, you have a strategy that's built specifically around that, so you will at least be able to take, I guess, equal advantage off of that in worst case, and then hopefully in most cases more advantage off of whatever Group Hug cards you have out there than your opponents. So you are helping out everyone, but in a way you're kind of not. And this definitely sees a lot of different flavors depending on who you talk to, what kind of decks you have. I mean, I've definitely heard of Feldegriff decks where they're just, you know, just giving people stuff. There's really no way to win in those decks. It's just, it's a Feldegriff deck. And then I've also heard of other ones where it's far more competitive like yours. So it's definitely a spectrum that can take on a whole lot of interesting stuff. I've got a friend, Infamous Fridge, who I will have on the podcast at some point, who before the ban had a Golos Group Hug deck that was really awesome to play against because it didn't really look to abuse the value that it was getting off all of its Group Hug cards. It was legitimately a Group Hug kind of give everybody a resource, kind of let's just have fun about that. And I'm going to use that as a perfect pivot point to get back to our original topic here, is that you mentioned at the beginning of the show here that Group Hug is a social experience. And kind of as a microcosm of EDH being a very social experience, is that we're sitting down with strangers or with people we know, it doesn't matter, to play a common game utilizing common rules. We all have the same number of cards in our decks. We, in theory, have the same number of commanders. I mean, obviously, it's going to be one or two, depending on if you have the partners. But you're going to have access to the same number of cards. So you draw the same number in your opening hand. You have access to a creature or two that you're always going to have access to in your command zone. The rules of Magic are the same. You have the same life total when you start out, etc., etc., etc. I could go on. But ultimately, the difference here, and people talk about this so much, is that we are doing multiplayer, but EDH is a social format first and foremost. We're sitting down to play this game, but we're not always trying to be competitive in that environment. And I'm not saying anything about being competitive. There is definitely the right spheres for that, but, you know, Group Hug definitely thrives on that social aspect more than a lot of other archetypes, and it definitely brings out a lot of what's really cool about Magic, because you're really it kind of runs in the face of every other strategy you can think of in EDH. We think a lot about discard strategies, force sacrifice strategies, aristocrats, just all sorts of ways to be able to deny your opponent's resources, whereas Group Hug is providing those resources just that you're trying to get a little bit ahead in by kind of flipping the coin on its head, if it were, to be able to, you know, try to get your value engine online and then hopefully be able to win the game. So I guess it's a very interesting way to get at that problem, but you're also drawing more on the social aspects than I would say pretty much any other strategy that's out there.
The only one that I think even approaches it is, and this is kind of difficult to classify, because I mean, if you're playing a political deck, if you're playing a deck where the entire thing is about making deals, making friends, and that's extremely fun, by the way. If you're in the right play group where you're talking about real friends and, hey, I can give some resources away, or, hey, can you let me hit you and it'll allow me to draw a card and I'm also going to give you this in return. That kind of stuff is fun for me. Maybe it's just because, you know, that's my job is in sales, so I like interacting with people and negotiating and making things work. But you said it specifically as far as our format, EDH, is way different from just about every other format of Magic and most forms of competitive games, because when you get into a four-person group, you can make it every person for themselves. We're just going to do our best here. I'm going to do what's best for me, and that's it. But if that's the case, I feel like you're wasting an opportunity, because you can be playing, you know, in a casual format. You can be playing budget decks, theme decks, whatever. I was super thrilled because I have a political Arden and Jessica theme deck, where the entire thing is everybody is playing Voltron. Because all I'm going to do is put a ton of equipment out onto the board, and I'm going to see who wants to soup something up. And I was very excited that one of my friends was playing werewolves, because I got to ask them, hey, you're not going to hit me with that, right? Cool. Here is your flying, protection from black, protection from green, trample, assault-suited werewolf.
Okay.
Then it's going to do triple damage to somebody that isn't me. Feel free to swing away. And then them having a great time with that. Because it's something where I'm getting benefit from giving somebody else resources. It's not necessarily a group hug. That's more of a group slug deck.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole premise of, if the only thing that matters to us is winning the game, then there should only, you know, the actual card pool of decks that you would play would go down significantly. This is a game about having fun, especially in EDH, world, because that's why there's so many decks in EDH rec that are all sorts of weird commanders and everything. I feel like when you get into the group hug, yes, there are ways to make it powerful and competitive, and there are ways that people don't necessarily get all of the ideas on, and that's where we get into the, again, trying to make more of a deck that, hey, I'm going to be able to take best advantage of the resources. As long as there is a way for the deck to win, I'm pretty good with you playing whatever kind of deck that it is. If it's just there out, if it's out there to dirtle, I can't stand that. Like, I have significant issues with stacks decks in particular, because if the whole premise of the deck is to not let anybody do anything and eventually win in turn 20, my eyes glaze over, I scoop, or at least ask permission to scoop and be able to do something later. But that's kind of where we lean towards group hug, and where I get my love for it in particular, the ability to converse with everybody and do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think now that we've defined how we look at group hug and trying to dispel some of those notions, how about you go into a few of the things that your decks, your group hug decks do, and just kind of highlight what are some of the social aspects, some of the social cards we have in there, and then also how you balance those more sociable cards with engines that can actually help you win, even though you're providing your opponents with some extra resources.
Absolutely. So let's take, as one of the examples, you talked about, you know, the biggest group hug commanders, right? And the first one that you talked about was Kaneos and Tiro. So that is a little bit of a benefit, because you're giving everybody something. They're either going to draw a card or play a land, but you're going to get the benefit of both. So in a deck where you're going to be getting extra cards and extra lands onto the table, big mana spells are going to be more powerful. Tokens are going to be more powerful because you're able to get more of those onto the table. My win con for Kaneos and Tiro is tokens. It is big mana. It is being able to get out everything as fast as possible for everybody. But I have no problem if I'm giving them extra resources, if I have ways of taking advantage of that. So a lot of being able to get out extra lands, draw extra cards, bring out the mana doublers, bring out the token doublers, bring out the Sylvan Offering. I'm going to make this many 1/1s, and you're going to make this many 1/1s, and you're going to make a XX, and I'm going to make an XX, and then turning those into mana. Turning that and then being able to turn it all sideways, because, yeah, enjoy your extra couple of cards or lands. I'm going to Storm Herd on turn 5, and then I'm going to pump them all up. That kind of stuff. With Silvala, Explorer Returned, I have absolutely no problem if I'm drawing everybody an extra card on my turn. Because while I'm doing that, the life gain is nice. But if I'm on curve even, and I'm turn four, tapping Silvalla, and I've got four mana available to me, with the option of getting anywhere from zero to an additional four mana, I'm going way faster than everybody else, even though I'm giving them some benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you turn all of these into the idea of, all right, as long as I'm not losing value, then I'm going to be in good shape. One of my favorite cards is a group hug card called Oath of Leges. Have you heard of this before?
I think I have, but I think for the audience out there, might as well read the card. Yeah.
So this is a one generic and white enchantment that says at the beginning of each player's upkeep, if an opponent controls more lands than them, they can search their library for a basic land and put it onto the battlefield untapped. If I'm playing a deck that doesn't have green in it, if I'm playing a deck that doesn't do a ton of card draw, so a mono white deck or a Boros deck, I don't mind giving everybody the opportunity to get an extra land because I'm always going to need that extra land. So if I can bring everybody a little bit closer to the same level and I'm also getting that benefit, two things usually happen. No one tries to target Oath of Leges unless they're the one who's already way ahead in lands because mm-hmm. they don't want anybody else to catch up. And if somebody blows up Oath of Leges, there's only one person that's happy with that decision and three people that are going to be upset.
Mm-hmm.
I usually get a little bit less drawing of ire when I'm playing group hug because, again, I'm helping everybody. And if somebody takes away the fun, well, now somebody else is in trouble because I'm just trying to give everybody a good time. At the same time, it's a little devious, I admit, because I am trying to benefit myself and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the other part of playing group hug and some of the aspects and resources is if you're in danger, I can try and say somebody's going to win the game on their next turn. I can spend six mana to go draw four card or, you know, three or four cards from my deck in some kind of stroke of genius, Blue Sun Zenith kind of play to try and dig further to find an answer. Or I can spend all of that mana and everything that I've got to say, hey, does anybody have an answer in their deck? Okay, great. You're going to dig through that many cards. Because now I'm ingratiating myself, but if I'm working with somebody at the same time to try and find an answer or try and get something that's going to make the game better, I can double my resources because now I'm not looking for the card and saving the mana to be able to cast it. I'm just getting as much into somebody else's deck for them to take care of a problem, and then we've done this together. If in turn they decide that they're going to win the game, that's okay because I was already going to lose. So I like the aspect of being able to generate resources for myself because I am Battlecruiser Magic dude. Like, that's my thing. I like seeing big haymaker swings and then those swings failing and then somebody else winning. I like it when everybody has a chance to try and win the game. And group hug is where I feel like I've got the most control over that. Everybody's going to have chances to win. But more likely what happens is if I give everybody resources and everybody takes their chance to win, everybody's going to be more likely to have a response to those wins. And then I'm ready to go when I know it's time.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that group hug is like some weird form of undercover control deck, I suppose, where you're kind of biding your time, waiting for everyone to try to give their best punches and then trying to wait it out, or something different?
It can be. Because in most of my group hug decks at the same time, I don't play a ton of, like, you would think, okay, I'm going to play group hug. So I'm going to give everybody resources, which means that I'm going to be dealing with their best stuff all the time. Just like common sense would tell you, okay, well, that means that I need to have a good amount of targeted removal or board wipes or things where if it gets out of hand, I've got to stop it. But the real thing is, it's really not. I'm not trying to control the board state so much as just, hey, everybody go, and when it's my turn to try to win the game, I'm going to do it. What really happens is that you tend to get that place first because you're able to see what's in your hand. You're able to forecast a couple of turns, and you're not putting a whole lot of things onto the board that other people are inclined to remove because they're getting a benefit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If I, like, that Oath of Legis card, the only reason that it gets removed is if somebody decides to use a resource from their hand to destroy an enchantment that gives everybody else lands because they have more lands than all their opponents. But that means that you're using a resource that you would use on something much more powerful. You know, that's a disenchant that you would be using on a planar portal, or I'm having a hard time even coming up with something off the top of my head. But if you're talking about destroying, you know, somebody's soul ring, that's something you're doing because it's a really competitive game. This is most group hug cards, because they benefit everybody, the only reason that they get destroyed is because at the end of somebody's turn, they have the ability to destroy it to deny those resources to everybody else. Even then, typically three people versus one that were able to, one person that was able to get that benefit, they're going to be able to bring them back down to earth. I guess when you say, is it kind of like a weird version of control? I'm willing to concede that, because normally in control, you're trying to slow down the tempo. You're trying to bring everybody to your level. The difference is that in group hug, I'm trying to make the level go up. We are pumping up the volume. We're going fast, but I'm going to be ready for it. And I know what I'm going to do. And I have the plan of, okay, in turn three, everyone's getting double mana. So that means in turn four, I know I'm going to do this, this, and this. That's kind of where I'm leaning.
Okay, so I guess maybe I misspoke. Maybe it's more of like a tempo deck or something where you're...
You're still right. It's still a certain form of control. I'm going to control the pace. Yeah, it's going to be a tempo deck. It's just I'm controlling the tempo of the game. And the best part about that is how many people like playing against stacks.
Some definitely do. I mean, again, on the show, I'm not trying to vilify anything, but
not at all.
From what I have heard from the community, stacks is not a very popular strategy.
It's a popular strategy to play, but I don't know a ton of, like, it's not an interaction that I see a whole lot where somebody, you know, sees a stacks deck and says, yes, awesome, I'm going to play against that.
In CDH is definitely fine, and a lot of people play stack sex, but again, in more casual settings, you're probably not going to see as many stacks pieces. And you're going to see more hate bears, maybe,
right.
But you probably won't see too many. I think you're going to get more taxing effects than actual stacks in more casual tables, and then it's going to go up as you go up in optimization.
Right, and let me clarify here. I am by no means saying stacks is bad, you shouldn't play stacks, etc., 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying more is it is very easy to become a target because you're playing stacks, because you're going to stop somebody from doing a very efficient strategy, and something that I don't build a lot of stacks decks, but I've piloted a bunch of stacks decks, and I see the appeal. Like, there is power in that. You're controlling tempo. Sometimes you're saving the board from something terrible happening. I am not saying don't play stacks. I am saying that the amount of joy that you'll see in my eyes when I'm looking across the table and I know you are playing a stacks deck is usually not the kind of joy that other people see when somebody's playing group hug, because we're all going to go. And it means that, frankly, I don't know if it's because you're being underestimated. I don't know if it's because you're underestimated, or you're giving resources to the table so they want to keep you around or whatever. But the target on your back becomes so much smaller compared to everybody else, because if everybody's throwing out these haymakers, even if sometimes they win the game faster than they should, because you're, well, frankly, you're helping them to it, it can be really beneficial.
Yeah, It's definitely one of those things where you kind of have to change your mindset a little bit about group hug. Is that, again, there's just so many different ways to define group hug that,
For sure.
A lot of ways to define stacks. I mean, I just brought up hate bears. Well, some would consider that to be stacks. Otherwise, you may have the more stacks effects, which literally lock you out in some cases. And yeah, so we obviously have different shades of this. But I kind of go back to the top of the episode here. Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy the most in the social experience about playing group hug? We've talked about how the game mechanics of group hug allow other players to be able to do things, to be able to kind of control the tempo and be able to force everyone onto a more even playing field. But what do you consider are the real payoffs for a group hug in the social aspect, since this is such a social format?
Sure. Well, in the, game theory kind of way, the big benefit is it is a lot easier to stick around in a game if you're providing everybody resources. You're typically not the first player out, and that's all well and good. But in the social aspect specifically, when you play a Heartbeat of Spring on turn 3 and everybody's mana is doubled, and you say, all right, let's go, there is an excitement at the table, because we're going to go, okay, all right, I need to rethink what I was going to do next turn. This is cool. Let's go. It's that benefit of, does anybody ever really feel good if one player at the table is missing their land drops and they haven't been able to play things and they're discarding, or they're flooded so they can only cast their commander and that's all they really get to do?
No, not really.
The benefit. Yeah. So the ability to ensure that everybody gets to do something in the game, whether it's making the big, crazy, awesome play, or stopping the big, crazy, awesome play, the ability to give everybody the opportunity to participate in the game means that they're actually paying attention to the game, which means they're ingrained in the game, which means the focus is there because no one's out of it at any given time. And I think that's kind of where I lean towards most. If I'm able to give everybody enough value to where they know that they're in, it means that the game is going to have a lot more conversation about the game and talking about what's going on. And frankly, I dig that.
Yeah, it's definitely not a good feeling to ever be stuck on mana or, mana flood like that. I had a couple of games just yesterday, so the day before we were recording this, where I really got screwed for lands, and then I just got flooded with my high CMC stuff, and, I couldn't contribute to the board state. And that's not very much fun to be stuck in that kind of position where you can't get to any of your card draw, your low CMC stuff is somewhere further down the deck, you can't even really cast your commander. Yeah, it's not the kind of game that you want to be stuck in as a player. So the ability, and it's definitely not a thing you really want to see across the table from you, in a social experience, because you know that, well, maybe my chances of winning have gone up, but I feel sometimes I've kind of felt like when my opponents, especially my regular play group, get mana screwed, it almost kind of cheapens the win a little bit if you turn out to win, because like, you didn't necessarily get to try to fend off that other player. They never really had a chance to try to be competitive in that game. And I've definitely had that feeling where it's just, if they hadn't been mana screwed, I don't think I win that game. So I did win, but I didn't feel like I really earned it,
I get that. And that's definitely part of it, And I think part of the conversation for me is, if we're just talking about a group hug strategy's ability to win versus every other archetype, I am totally I totally understand if you told me, well, it has less of a chance to win versus all these other types. That's fine. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I could see the argument. For me, it's much more about, like I said before, the social contract. The benefit towards everybody having fun, including me, is I would like to win, but sometimes winning for me isn't just strictly being the last player in the game. It's being able to say this player is new to the game and is playing with a pre-con, and we were able to get them to a point where they were hanging around with everybody else. Maybe they don't win the game, maybe they do, but to where I know that every person at the table is going to have a good time, including myself. I love leaning into that. And frankly, it was one of those things when I first started playing Group Hug, I did it on the premise of, well, I don't really care if I win. I just want to make sure everybody gets to do a bunch of cool stuff, including me. And I had that realization of, oh, this can be really problematic, because if I'm never really in the game, except for essentially as, you know, nitro for everybody else to go faster, I'm really just messing up their game. So if I can compete while I'm doing this, that would be a lot of fun. Let me try and do that. And then did a bunch of digging, find better resource management, find ways to where, hey, everybody gets to go fast, but I'm playing this for a reason. It's not to make everybody go fast. It's because I need to go fast. And hopefully what I've got in my hand and my next turn or my follow-up is going to be more powerful than what you all get to do with your current. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I'll tell you this, I've got a bunch of decks that I feel like I win with more than a quarter of the time. And I feel like that's pretty much the premise that you're looking for in your playgroup. If you've got a deck, how good is it? I don't know. Does it win more than a quarter of the time? Usually means it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And it also, again, goes back to that whole social contract, you know, mm-hmm. the social contract podcast. It's either there's a reason why we bring that in here. But yeah, it just being able to bring the game kind of full circle.
Yeah.
Socially as well as mechanically and in the game. It's definitely something that I could probably stand to learn a lot more about. I mean, that's half why I invited you on here. Was like, I need to learn more about this Group Hug, because I guess I've never really found a way to make it work for me. But, mm-hmm. you know, I can say that about a lot of strategies, too. It's like this is part of our growth and evolution as EDH players, is trying new things. I love building new decks. I love trying new things. And, you know, working this out is trying to figure out exactly how can I make a Group Hug deck that works, but also that is really fun to pilot. I think that's something that often gets kind of lost in the shuffle amongst the EDH community, is we kind of think about, okay, what's this deck going to do for me? But in a Group Hug deck, you're definitely thinking about, what is this deck going to do for everyone else? And how is that going to affect the dynamic of this game? And definitely a lot more than most other strategies.
And it's frankly, it's a reflection of both, right? Because you have to balance, okay, what is this Group Hug deck going to do for me and for everybody else? And I think if you get really far into brewing a Group Hug deck, one of the issues that comes up is, I'm going to play this piece. I'm going to play this card. And it says at the beginning of everybody's upkeep. So I'm actually going to be the last person to gain the benefit out of that. Well, I don't want to do that, because what if I never get the benefit? There is so much worst case scenario when you're talking about symmetrical cards that people don't understand that the value that's usually attached with them is extravagant. Basically, the mascot of our podcast as a card is Veteran Explorer. Are you familiar with this one?
I mean, I've heard of it, but again, for the listeners out there, definitely read it out and let us know what it does.
So Veteran Explorer is a one green, so a one mana creature that is a 1/1 that says when it dies, each player may go into their library and grab two basic lands and put them onto the battlefield untapped. Everybody is incentivized to let this thing die, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a 1/1. You can make a deal on when you're going to do it. If you get it in a turn, if it's your turn one play, everybody's excited. All of that good stuff. But one of the things that can happen a lot is if I've got a win con in my hand and I can recur this Veteran Explorer, it is common that I am going to get every basic land out of everybody's decks.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the decks where I have a Veteran Explorer in some way to do that, I run a lot more basic lands. I don't mind if everybody gets all their basic lands out of their deck, and that's somewhere between, you know, 12 and 20 for everybody else, but it's 35 for me. I like the idea of trying to benefit, okay, this is what it's going to be for the table. Instead of just me or just everybody else, what is it going to do for the table if I play this card? And what are some ways that I can take advantage of that scenario? So it is, I'm not going to say it's harder to build a group hug deck. It's really easy to build a group hug deck, to be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. And the real issue is when you're building it, you have to figure out how the deck is going to win and why it's going to win more consistently than everyone else at the table when you're giving everybody this resource. And that, yeah, you're right. Sometimes the mentality on that can be hard to get around, but hey, I'm happy to build a group hug deck with you. We can take a look at the lists and everything, get a game going. I will say this, I don't recommend playing four group hug decks at the same table at the same time. Not because it's not fun, but math. Math gets so complicated at a certain point if everybody has scoot swarms and everybody's getting extra land drop. Oof. Maybe on Arena if they ever do that, but otherwise, group hug is one of those things that it's a fun archetype.
Yeah, I've heard of other creators doing the group hugageddon. I believe it was called, and yeah. I didn't necessarily see how those turned out, but you know, for myself, but I did hear that there was some crazy stuff going down. So
I'll tell you what, those actually, those do more harm than good as far as I'm concerned, because I will tune into those. And the problem is that I'm not trying to generalize here, but what I've seen is that people doing the four group hug decks at the same time, it almost makes the game more complicated. Turns take way too long because of all of the extra resources. Mm-hmm. And it almost slows down the game because there's so much to do on each end and each independent turn and, you know, step. If it's something where you're speeding up the game, again, say we're going to make it 25% faster or 25% bigger. Typically, that is enough for people to be able to compute because, hey, I thought my deck was going to do this. It's actually going to do this plus a little bit more. When it turns into everybody's going full bore, fat, okay, great. Well, I'm drawing 12 cards on my draw step and my mana taps for triple. And, okay, what else do I have to worry about? Then it can get a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, the last time I played against one group hug deck, we were already up to about 5 or 6 cards drawing on the upkeep. I could not imagine having to draw 12 cards. Sounds like a good way to mill yourself out, I suppose.
Well, and that's one of the group hug strategies. It's I'm going to mill everybody out, but I'm going to have, you know, the couple of cards in my deck that allow me to reshuffle my graveyard into my library or things along those lines to stick around, because most people, you know, unless they're doing that kind of strategy where they plan on drawing a bunch of cards. Okay.
So again, now that we've talked about a lot of this stuff, I think really the last question that I would have for you is, say someone asked you to how they could build their first group hug deck. Sure. What words of advice would you give them for trying that first deck and then also trying to balance out the combination of, as we've talked about so many times on the show, gameplay versus just the social experience?
Absolutely. And I like if we're talking about if somebody, is this like the my friend needs to build a group hug deck kind of situation?
Maybe. I'm not going to say yes. I'm not going to say no.
Cannot confirm or deny.
Yep.
Here's what I would say. If you're building your first, right, I think you work backwards from what you normally would. And this is going to be something where, you know, my co-host might disagree with me. Alex is a very good deck builder. I think I'm a pretty good deck builder myself. And most of the time when I'm building a deck, I say, okay, what do I want to do? Right? What do I want the deck to do? In this case, if you're building your first group hug deck, I think instead the way that you make the deck the most fun and the most efficient and effective, all in the same group, right? Figure out what your win con is. Figure out what your deck wants to do to win specifically. And then go backwards. If your deck wants to win because you're going to put out a bunch of really big creatures, okay. those big creatures typically are going to have high mana cost. So let's do things that are going to help us with mana, and it's going to be all of the, you know, Dictate of Karametra, Heartbeat of Spring, Mana Flip, that kind of stuff. Okay, great. You know what? My deck is going to put out big, crazy stuff, so I'm going to give everybody more mana.
Okay.
Because I'm going to benefit the most out of that as far as my deck building is concerned, because what I want to do is big mana spells. If you want to build a deck where your win con is milling everybody out, but it's not milling everybody out, I'm going to let you draw all of the cards. Great. Then do that. And then put in the pieces that are encouraging everybody to draw cards, and you benefit whenever you're drawing cards. Work backwards. Normally, I try to build my foundation first when I'm building a deck. If you're trying to build a Groupug deck for the first time, go ahead and start with the top floor of that tower and then work your way down. And what will happen is one of two things. Either one, you'll build this deck and you'll decide about partway through that you don't want to build a Groupug deck, that you just want to build this deck. And that's totally fine and reasonable. Congratulations on your new whatever deck it is. Or as you're working backwards, you'll actually see, okay, I'm giving benefit to my opponents by doing extra mana, doing extra cards, giving people extra things. But look at how I can use all of these things because my deck is built around getting them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody gets more creatures because I'm going to give people creature tokens. But I get all those tokens too. And when I get creature tokens, I get this, 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 and this. And when they get creature tokens, they get creature tokens. So work your way backwards. Find out what it is that you want to win with or how you want the deck to compete. And then work your way backwards from that. And it's really easy to find a path of, oh, I don't care if everybody has a lot of resources because I know how I want to use them.
Yeah, so in a way, you're kind of deconstructing the deck by trying to figure out how you're going to best use those group hug pieces. And then you're going to try to figure out which pieces you need and which ones you're going to cut. Because when you look at EDH Rec, there are so many cards out there that allow you and or your opponents or everyone to gain some sort of advantage, and trying to figure out exactly which one of those is going to work is definitely going to be a challenge. I mean, I'm just looking through this list right now, and I can see a lot of these where I'd say, yes, this is kind of a slam dunk. I personally would put this in one in a group hug deck utilizing that color. There's other ones where I guess I'm not seeing it. Again, we talk about EDH Rec a lot and providing recommendations. These are just recommendations regarding on what other people have put in their decks. And there's probably some cards I have sitting around in my long box that I talk about all the time that would probably fit better than some of these would. But I also have my, my Truce, my random Alliance of Arms or Windfall, things like that, you know, in theory can help everybody, but can also really screw everyone over depending on how you use it. And
absolutely,
yeah, it's trying to find the right balance. And we could say that for every deck, but I think for a group hug deck, you really have to find that balance. In a way, I suppose, just the way I look at it, is you kind of have to fine tune things more than other more streamlined decks, because you have to try to figure out that balance of, well, I want to give everyone resources, but how can I make sure to maximize my return while also potentially limiting everyone else's return? And that's really the first hurdle for me personally trying to get into group hug, is figuring out how much is too much for providing resources to your opponent versus giving yourself those same resources.
It is definitely there is a balancing act, because at a certain point, if you're just giving the table resources and you're basically relying on like one or two cards to win the game, that's a really good way to have somebody else win the game 90% of the time, and then every once in a while get the card that you want.
Sure, sure.
And hope that it works out. One of my favorite things to do in group hug, there's a couple, we actually did our Power 9 of group hug episode not too long ago, and a couple of the cards that showed up in there were Forced Fruition, which is a 6 mana blue enchantment. It's a 4/2 blue enchantment that says whenever an opponent successfully casts a spell, they draw 7 cards.
Oh, yes, that one.
And here's the thing. That hits the table, and every one of your opponents gets real excited. And then they play two spells, and they're still really excited. And then it comes back to their turn, and they play two spells, and that excitement starts to dwindle a little bit. Because now they've gone through over a quarter of their deck, and they have to start really picking and choosing everything that they're going to do. But at the same time, it's hurting everybody else, so maybe it sticks around. But it doesn't hurt you. You're giving away resources, and you're the one who gets a benefit after that first initial reaction. A lot of the time, what will happen in group hug decks is the way that you'll win is you'll give everybody a whole bunch of stuff, and then you'll stop them from being able to play it. I don't like to do that. I like the overall everybody battle cruiser, everybody go big, everybody go fast. But if I, like I said before, if I know that everybody is expecting a foot race and then I put everybody in a car, well, if I've been practicing driving this car and my deck is built on it, I'm going to be a lot better at it. One of the good examples we like to use is a card called Vernal Equinox. It's a 3 generic and a green enchantment that says all players may cast enchantment and creature spells as though they had flash.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a super budget Allurin, right?
Yep.
If my deck is based off of enchantments and creatures, I'm going to have a lot more benefit out of that than anybody who's playing artifacts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I like being able to have that little bit of, if everything that I play has benefit towards the table, it's a symmetric effect, but I can take the most advantage out of it, I'm going to have the most fun, even though everybody's going to have more fun because they get to play more stuff than they were planning on.
Yep. That's a really good way to say it, actually. It's just, again, building your deck around the things that you need to be able to make it work. It's the same tenets as no matter what other strategy you're looking at, you always need to make sure you find that right mix of cards. But once you do, it's a very viable strategy.
Yeah, it can be a little daunting to build. I totally recognize that. Try it out. I guarantee you, if you build a deck and you say, I want this deck to do this, and then instead of building a group hug deck, build a deck where you want to do something and then find the most efficient ways for you to do that. Whether it's the best mana cost abilities, whether it's, you know, the less expensive cards and actual fiscal means, you're going to see that that's going to be symmetrical effects more times than not, because I can cultivate and I'll go get a basic onto the battlefield tapped and one into my hand, or I can veteran explorer and kill it and I'm going to give everybody 2 lands. Now, yeah, I didn't get as much advantage because everybody else came with me. But if I can take more advantage of going faster and getting all these resources, it's a fun way to go.
Definitely sounds good. Well, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be with me on the podcast here today. It's been great having you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. Whether we're talking about building group hugs or whatever else, I'm super excited to be here.
All right, and could you tell the listeners again where they can find the Social Contract?
Yeah, so again, you can find it on all of the podcasting things. There's like 9,000 podcasting services at this
no
point.
No joke.
But if you search for the Social Contract and EDH podcast, you're going to find us. You're going to see the scroll on there with the mana symbols, and you're going to be able to find us pretty easily. You can also find us on Twitter at EDH_social, or you can find me on Twitch at Nerdworks Media. We do a lot of Vigijames and, you know, nerdy Dungeons and Dragons. I haven't done nearly as much Magic the Gathering, and especially EDH, as I'd like to, because it's hard to get 4 people on a schedule when you're busy, man. It's really difficult, but there's a couple places you can find us, and again, thank you very much for having me here.
No problem. It's been great having you. And if you're interested in finding me on Twitter, you can find me at at MTG in Quarantine. If you found the really happy-looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones stuck in a giant bubble, you found the right place. You can also find the entire back catalog of the MTG in Quarantine podcast on all of those million different podcast outlets, but specifically Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, MTG, Cast, CastBox, Podcast Addict, and a few others that I always forget to mention. But yeah, just type us into your web browser, or type me into the web browser, MTG in Quarantine, and you'll definitely find me somewhere. And again, I'd like to use this opportunity to give another huge shout-out and thank you to my awesome patrons who have supported me over on patreon.com/mdginquarantine. So again, huge shout-out to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Drake Lucian, and Neo Royal for supporting this program. If you'd like to help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mdginquarantine for more information. And I hope you really enjoyed listening to this group hug episode on the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.